south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, as if you need another reason to get the hell out of Dodge. Listen to this email from one of our Texas Daves. Remember, there are unofficially more Daves listening to this podcast than persons of any other name. Don't ask me why, but with the Daves of the world, it's a big hit. Anyway, Texas Dave says, Johnny, I got COVID recently and was told I don't qualify for monoclonal antibody treatment. As I have done more research, it's becoming clear why. If this is not a good reason to accelerate my plan B, I don't know what is. Why would I want to continue to support a system that denies me health care on the basis of my race when I pay for that health care with my tax dollars? Then he sends me a link to the Texas MacArthur Medical Center in Irvine, Texas, where it says hospitals across the country are automatically granting monoclonal antibody treatments to patients of certain races while simultaneously denying them to patients of other races. The MacArthur Medical Center website says that Latinx or black patients automatically qualify for monoclonal antibody treatments. Others, such as those who are white, must instead qualify via other means. That is by having other risks, such as obesity, heart disease, or being over 65. All right, Dave, I hear what you're saying. I'm in total agreement. But here's the thing. Guys like you, Dave, and let me be a little harsh here. You've been listening to my show for maybe 5-10 years now, right? And you still haven't gotten off the damn fence. You're no farther along in your plan B than you were 5 years ago. You haven't sold your cars, liquidated your properties, cashed out of your bank accounts. Come down to Latin America a few times, get boots on the ground, open a bank account, get a lawyer, apply for residency, get a network going. Hate to say it, Dave, but I'd say 90% of the people listening to this show have great dreams of having a plan B, but they're never going to pull the trigger. They're going down with the ship, and not just little by little. It used to be little by little, and now it's in great steps and leaps. That's why, as I watch the first world collapse from a nice, comfortable distance, I don't feel sorry for people who are stuck up there whining and complaining of how everything's just going to shit. It's sort of a mirror image of what I saw happening with Bitcoin. I started talking about it, I think, in 2013 when it was $200. I got all kinds of resistance from people calling it a Ponzi scheme, people who watched CNN, even seasoned investors who watched the markets closely. And of course, people who paid attention to the mainstream markets, because all the gurus there said it was a scam. The Jamie Dimons in the world said it was dog poop. Yep. Dog poop. Now, 10 years later, they're all in. All. Well, you know the rest of the story. So, the question is not how did I get so smart? I wasn't smart at all. Not about crypto. I didn't know crap about it at first. Well, it was just that, for some reason, all the very, very smartest nerds and engineers that I knew were talking about it, getting in and diving deep. No, not smart psychologists or MBAs, Wall Street types, or gender studies people. Nope, I was listening to my brilliant nerd esoteric software buddies. I'll tell you, when you're in a room and you don't even understand what the nerds are talking about, you'd be a fool not to ask them what they're investing in. And you know, within 5 years, everything's going to be on the blockchain, including real estate and contracts, and crypto will be everywhere. And if you're not familiar with cryptos or the blockchain, you might as well be riding a camel. So you better start learning or you're really going to be left behind. By the way, when people send me emails asking about all those coins and tokens out there, I think there's something like 6,000 of them now. They ask me for investment advice, and I'm not an investment analyst, but I'll tell them this. All the people I know who've made big money in crypto have not made it by trading. They buy a coin or two, something on the top 10 list, the well-known top few that have been there a long time. Just go to CoinMarketCap and check it out. You'll see. And if you're going to play around and invest, stick with the top 5 or 10. The number one, of course, Bitcoin. Number two, Ethereum. Number three, Cardano. And as far as making lots of money, I don't know anyone who's made lots of money buying and selling, buying and selling. The guys who buy and hold make the money. Then you don't have to worry about the crazy daily fluctuations. You just buy some of whatever crypto it is. Put it in your cold storage wallet and look at it every couple of months or whenever you feel like it. Just leave it there like a savings bond. Only if it really was a savings bond, you'd be losing money to inflation every day. Anyway, my advice, and I'm not an investment analyst. Treat your crypto like a savings account. Buy, hold, put it in cold storage, and wait. The world's financial system is collapsing. The U.S. dollar will go to zero. Every single fiat currency known to man for the last 2,000 years has gone to zero because governments keep printing more and devaluing it. I know it's a very hard thing to get into your head that the U.S. dollar is doomed. It's a failure. People still don't believe it when I tell them that back in 1913, when the Federal Reserve Act came into effect, since then, the U.S. dollar has lost 93% of its value. And that's a success story? I know. Every day you get pop-up windows about the latest, greatest crypto that you should buy right now because it's going to 1,000x, right? Don't get sucked in by that. Though I have to say, if I had no crypto at all and I was just getting started today, I think you could make an awful lot of quick money on some of the new tokens that are coming out. But 99% of them won't be around in a couple years either. But you got to make a full-time job out of it. You got to be really on top of it. You can't just say, I'm going to get in today and look at it every couple of days. When those new coins and tokens come out, you have to get in really early before the pop-up window marketing hits. Like I said, these days, to really make money just getting in right now, you have to be on it 24/7. You have to make it a full-time job. Definitely a young person's game. Now, if you're still hesitant about crypto and you haven't got into it at all, you really should take Captain Mango's course. He'll hold your hand through the basics and help you buy some and put it in a cold storage wallet. And when you're done with that, you'll have the most important thing of all when it comes to crypto. You'll have confidence. You won't be scared of it anymore. Man, I remember way back when I first started playing around with crypto, you know, shooting a bit of Bitcoin from one wallet to another. Man, it was nerve-wracking because it would take a couple of minutes for the transaction to verify. And sometimes you'd sweat it out because during that little time period from when you sent the stuff to when the other person received it, nothing was happening. You were in limbo, so to speak. Yeah, I remember those days when your heart would pound a bit when you'd send a very large sum across the internet and wonder, fingers crossed, is it going to get there? Or is some hacker going to intercept it along the way? Because that stuff did happen, you know, especially before cold storage wallets like Trezors and Nanos. Before that, you had to leave your coins on an exchange that you had no control of. You'd have to trust them in someone else's hands, which is not a good thought. Some of those exchanges ripped you off or disappeared completely like Mt. Gox. So thank God for cold storage wallets. And Captain Mango will show you how to use one of those. In fact, he'll help you buy one. It's only something like $75, but the best $75 you'll ever spend if you're into crypto. But back to this idea of having a nice plan B and getting the hell out of Dodge. You know, for the life of me, I can't understand why so many smart, way above average people listening to this show. I just don't get how you could tolerate living up in the States one second longer. The news is terrible. It's never getting better. It's always getting worse, hour by hour. You're losing the value of your savings and income. They're forcing you into an experimental vax, chipping away at your freedoms. You're living in a big brother state, and yet, somehow, you're still there and whining and complaining about it. In fact, people send me their own personal horror stories every day, like this one. From Alex in Pennsylvania. Pottsylvania, that was where Rocky and Bullwinkle lived, right? There I go, showing my age again. Anyway, he says, Johnny, let's see how much hot water I can get into by stating a simple fact that no one wants to admit in public, but in private, yes. And because it's such an uncomfortable confirmation of what the wokesters will call white privilege, and it's so on PC, you might not want to read it on the air, because you might get canceled. Alex, believe me, they've tried. In fact, I'm going to tell you a little story about that too, if I have time. Anyway, Alex says, let's talk Western civilization, which is in heavy disrepute lately. Even though Western culture and invention is responsible for pretty much everything that's good and technological in this world. Everything that makes life easier for us. People will admit that in private, but they won't say it publicly. Or they'll get blocked from Facebook and Twitter. Boo-hoo. Now, I'm not kidding when I make that assertion. With the exception of a few good anomalies like Taoism, martial arts, yoga, oriental cooking, acupuncture, and Eastern natural medicine, if you take the inventions and discoveries that came out of the Eastern world and subtract the ones that came out of the Western world, it would be less than zero. Without the patents and inventions of the West, the whole world would resemble Africa, Cambodia, and Mongolia. Not even the Africa, Cambodia, and Mongolia of today, but 200 years ago. There would be no tech, no cars, no AC, no hot water, no refrigeration, no radio, TV, airplanes, penicillin, or even the flush toilet. Stop for a second there, Alex. You know, That reminds me a few years back when I went on a cruise and we stopped in Istanbul, Turkey. Went to a pretty nice restaurant. At least it looked nice until you went to the bathroom. Guess what kind of toilets they had? None. They had a hole in the floor. They had a place marked on the ground for your 2 feet so you knew where to stand or squat. Yep, I got to see and use more than once the Middle Eastern version of a toilet. Now remember, I'm not talking about a hole-in-the-wall snack bar or coffee shop. This was a very nice restaurant with nice tablecloths and wine glasses, etc. All right, enough with disgusting stuff. Let's get back to Alex. He says, Johnny, the ideas like individualism, freedom of thought, freedom of speech, science, rationality, capitalism, etc. are products of Western civilization. These are concepts that no longer have any defenders anywhere. They're under attack in every woke university curriculum, not just in the States, but everywhere. Sorry to say, and I think you know this, but 99% of all the useful patents in this world were produced by white guys of Western European descent. Whether they were in Europe when they did the hard science work, or in the USA, Canada, Australia, or Israel. It's an uncomfortable fact that wokesters deny. And though politicians lie, numbers don't. Then he says, it makes me laugh how a Muslim and another terrorist go on TV and berate Western decadence and use Western tools and drones to wreak havoc, behead people, and set off bombs with smartphone timers and igniters. There could be no terrorist attacks as we know them without the use of hated white male inventions of Western technology. And finally, he says, how can the world be healthy when what passes for a ruling class in the West actually hate themselves? And those in charge allow the middle class to collapse economically and psychologically, when everything is politically motivated instead of scientifically tested. So there's my 2 cents, Johnny. Go ahead and read it on your show at the risk of being canceled. Don't worry about me. I've already been canceled by my wife. She quit listening to my rants a long time ago. Signed, Alex, the least woke guy in my neighborhood. Well, thanks for that, Alex. The only thing I can think of is, why do I get emails like this all the time from very smart people like you, Alex, and yet you're up in Pottsylvania. Yeah, I haven't acted on a plan B. You're not voting with your feet. So what, am I supposed to feel sorry for you? I don't. Hey, I've been whistling the same tune for, what is it, 11, 12 years now on the show? And never once have I seen a single sign that it's getting any better, only worse. 30 years of year over year, first world deterioration. And yet only a tiny percentage of people have gotten the hell out of Dodge or have even made the effort to get some boots on the ground in a foreign country and have an escape plan. All right, enough said about that. Now, I know everyone loves a good gringo ripoff story. And the gringos I know who seem to get ripped off quite a bit are the ones who go to gringo tourist areas because that's where the locals look at you as dollar signs and just a mark to be gouged. But, you know, there's been sort of a new kind of gringo ripoff scheme that's been going down in just the last couple of years since this crypto boom has taken over. Lots of very young gringo guys, mostly guys, who've made sudden millions in the crypto market. They realize after a year or two of buying Lamborghinis and throwing huge parties that there are huge tax consequences to living in the USA. So they look to relocate in much friendlier tax jurisdictions like Puerto Rico and Panama. Those seem to be the most popular millionaire-billionaire crypto relocation destinations up to now, along with Dubai, I understand. It's all about the limited tax consequences, of course. And brand new on the map, been the last year, is El Salvador, but that's just so new, but it's catching on. Anyway, a lot of these young instant crypto millionaires love to show off their wealth. They love to buy really expensive cars, bling, and mansions. Saying that they're putting on the dog is way too kind. Bottom line, they're just asking to get gouged. And some of them have been really taken to the cleaners. Like, for example, this story of a young 20-something guy who moved to Panama for tax reasons after he made his first millions and got his house, his mansion, I should say, stolen from him by his own lawyer. And then, if you can believe it, it happened again. Allow me to pick out pieces of an interview with this guy so you can get the gist. He says, I moved out to Panama as a rich young gringo. Then he says, what do you think happens to rich young gringos in the third world who like to show off their wealth? First thing you have to know, he says, is you learn about Panama from one or two of their newspapers. They've got two main newspapers. The Prensa, which all the gringos down there read. It's a cleaned up sort of whitewashed paper. There are no pictures of dead bodies in La Prensa. No knifings, no gangland shootings. However, the other newspaper, the one the people on the street read, La Critica, has all the dead bodies and all the corpses. drug shootouts, executions, the real stuff. So depending on which newspaper you read, you'll find there's a wildly different opinion about what's going on in Panama. He said in his case, he was a victim of a scheme where he had fake bearer shares. You see, almost everyone who owns property in Panama owns it through a corporation. It's a way to avoid taxation when you sell the property. You just hand over the corporation to the buyer, and now he owns it tax-free. Then he says, I bet you had never heard about a guy who's had his house stolen from his mansion by his own lawyer. But it happened to him twice. Turns out, the Panama lawyer created a corporation. They had a shareholders meeting, but in reality, it was fake. But the young rich gringo was none the wiser. He ended up not owning the shares of his own company, which owned his mansion. So he lost his house to the lawyer who set up the corporation for him. So he hired a lawyer to go after that lawyer to get the house back. And that, he says, actually worked. He got the house back. So you wonder, how did his lawyer in the first place get the house when he was living in it? Well, he convinced him to leave. He said, come on down to Colombia for a vacation. Visit my family. So he did. He said he and his girlfriend went to Colombia. He's just sitting around in a big game room playing Xbox. And five guys with guns come into the room. Remember now, this is Colombia. And the leader of the group said, you don't own your house anymore. It's mine. If you have a problem with that, we could settle it right here. So in the deal, he lost his cars, his office building, and his mansion. All because of a crooked lawyer and the fact that he just had to show the world he was Mr. Young Millionaire. So how did he find that lawyer? Well, he just asked some people he didn't know all that well. And his Spanish sucked, of course. Anyway, he says, when he thinks about it and looks back, he now realizes everyone in Panama who knew him was working an angle to gouge gringos. Especially young gringos who made a ton of money quickly, who were stupid with their money and showed it. So anyway, he went back to Florida and hooked up with another Latino lawyer to go after some of these guys. Only to find out later on, the Latino lawyer received his law degree in prison. He'd been in prison because he ran a stolen Rolex watch operation. Man, you can see what's happening here, right? He just got in with the wrong bunch of guys. But to this day, he's still a multimillionaire, maybe even a billionaire. Though when he thinks about what happened in Panama, he feels like an idiot and licks his wounds. And now, of course, he'll never go back to Panama. And he lives in an undisclosed third world country. Very, very low profile. It's taught him the lesson that you really have to stay under the radar and be as anonymous as you possibly can. Oh, and then he said he found out that his lawyer would keep paying the judge in Panama to hide the paperwork so that no one could ever really investigate the case thoroughly. The paperwork for the corporation that owned the cars, the houses, the office buildings, etc., was always conveniently missing. So, lesson number one, you need a trusted Latin lawyer. How do you find one? Well, I've known mine, our seminar lawyer, for 25 years. And people may say he's slow, he's on mañana time, but they all are. But there's never been a single complaint about him ever ripping off a client. By the way, are you one of those idiots who's still using a mask outdoors or in your car? Well, a brand new study from the University of Bristol in the UK says that all coronaviruses lose 90% of their infectiousness within 5 minutes of becoming airborne. That means masks are totally ineffective. Because as soon as a virus is free in the air, within 5 minutes, it's deactivated. And that, of course, means if you have a mask and you've got COVID and are shedding, you're concentrating those viral particles within your mask. Yeah, idiot. The study says at much higher humidity, as, for example, within a mask, the droplets do not dry out instantly and remain fluid for longer, which means the virus remains stable and infectious during that time. Anyway, the study concludes the highly touted airborne spread mechanism may not be as important as we thought it was. Oh, and by the way, for all you guys and gals who still think Mexico is a great option for a plan B, did you see the news just this week? The corpses of 8 men and 2 women were found piled in a Mazda SUV parked under a decorated Christmas tree right beside the governor's palace in the city of Zacatecas in northern central Mexico. Authorities say at least 7 of them have been killed by asphyxiation from strangulation, with plastic wrap and packing tape placed over their faces to smother them. The question is, how is it possible to leave an SUV full of corpses in front of the governor's palace? And what kind of sign was it supposed to send? It appears the driver just drove up to the palace, got out, walked away without encountering any security forces at all. Of course, you guys and gals out there are absolutely convinced that Mexico's your plan B. You just love Mexico. This kind of stuff doesn't bother you, right? It doesn't rattle you, just a little bit. What's it going to take to convince you? What's it going to take? Oh, and here is a step in the right direction. This news comes from Ecuador. The headline says, the assets of 25 generals of the National Police Force are to be audited by the Comptroller's Office. First thing you have to ask is, why are there 25 freaking generals in the National Police Force? Please. I've seen some pictures of these guys, and they're all well over 5 feet and mostly under 400 pounds. So they got that going for them. So then, why are these guys getting audited? Well, according to the auditors responsible for the special examinations, they're asserting that the assets declared by the 25 generals do not coincide with the income obtained from their police salaries. You think? And here's the part that finally makes sense, because, you know, everywhere you go in Latin America, generals, colonels, captains, cops, and military officers of all kinds, they all drive nice cars and live in houses way beyond their means. But in this case, they're doing something different. They're investigating the generals and their families. Yep, they're going after the generals, their spouses, and their common law partners and minor children. Because that's how they hide dough, you know. They structure it through their wives and kids. Well, we'll see how that turns out. Oh, and another thing. If you're wondering about this term Latinx, which drives people down here in Latin America nuts, they can't stand the term. No one uses it. Well, a poll just came out in the western United States where most of the Latinos reside. And get this, the poll came from a Miami-based Democratic firm focusing on Latinos. They found only 2% of Latinos in the United States use the word Latinx to describe themselves. And almost none of them are first generation or new arrivals. In fact, the term Latinx is considered by some Latinos to be only used by pretentious woke Latinos. As, for example, Republican Ruben Galindo, a Democrat from Arkansas, he's the head of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. He said his congressional staff is not allowed to use Latinx in official communications. He says, in reality, there's very little to no support for its use, and it's sort of seen as something used inside the Beltway or in Ivy League settings. However, the term's often used by left-leaning Latino activists, but it's failed to gain buy-in from the people it's supposed to empower. Bottom line, it was a bad and misguided experiment. Time to retire it from official use, he says. Oh, and this is interesting, and I figured it all along. It says, the term Latinx may be popular among highly educated, woke Latinos in urban areas, but Hispanics in rural areas don't understand its purpose and are puzzled by it completely. We're talking about Latinos in the States, of course. And it says, get this, if you want to deliver an important message to Latinos in the USA, and you throw out the word Latinx, there's an instant disconnect. Users of the term obviously haven't done their homework. New arrivals and first-generation Latinos will switch you off. All right, let me tell you about one of my own related pet peeves. Now, there's a section in each LA Times called the Latinx Files. Idiotic, stupid, and ridiculous, I know. I read some of them, and they mostly make me want to vomit. The editor and main writer is a guy named Fidel Martinez. I mean, really, Fidel as in Castro, who he openly admires. The guy is a perfect example of one of the most toxic, woke, college-educated, university-brainwashed, second-generation Latinos I've ever come across. For example, here's just a little snippet of an article he wrote in defense of that rotten, disgusting reggaeton music. He says, quote, back in November, a concert pianist named James Rhode, in talking about the lasting legacy of classical music, said to me, Fidel, please explain to me this reggaeton music and this reggaeton superstar, Bad Bunny. I'm not saying that it's shit, he says to super wokester Fidel. He says, I just don't understand the popularity of it. If someone can explain it to me, please. And here's what Fidel says. I just want to pop this guy in a kisser. The soul of a reggaeton was created on the street. It is often minimized to music that degrades and sexualizes women, dismissed as repetitive, misogynistic noise, despite its nuance and legacy of resistance against white supremacy. What? That's a new one. You get that? He's saying reggaeton music is resistance against white supremacy. I think I'm going to have a stroke here before I get done reading this. And then this Fidel moron has the balls to say, call me biased, but in my mind, reggaeton music is as robust and sophisticated as any other music genre out there. Then he says, as for reggaeton artist Bad Bunny, a guy with more face piercings than brain cells, he says he's brought reggaeton to unparalleled heights. But you don't have to take my word for it, he says. You can ask any of his billions of listeners. Yeah. Billions of listeners with two-digit vocabularies and IQs of around 40. All right, so as for the benefit of the doubt, let's go over the five major themes in reggaeton music. Number one, sex. Number two, money. Number three, bling. Number four, cars. Number five, more sex. Matter of fact, there are no other themes in reggaeton music. Oh, except I forgot. It's a legacy of resistance against white supremacy. That said, just a word of advice for all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes and all of you who've got your plan B going and you've been down here and have got boots on the ground. You will find reggaeton music blasting out of every street corner. And that may be one of the only positive advantages to not knowing any Spanish. You won't have to listen to what those morons are singing about. Just know you won't be able to avoid it. It's everywhere. And you won't get anywhere trying to convince Latinos how vacant, useless, and demeaning to women it is. And though Latinas down here know that, they understand the words. For them, it's not all about the words. It's about the rhythm and the beat. And if you can dance to it, and all that reggaeton music, man, you can dance to it. But it has created a gigantic group of shiftless Latinos that think they're going to be the next Bad Bunny. That's the real sad part. It breaks down like this. About half of the young adolescent and young adult Latinos think they're going to be soccer stars, and the rest think they're going to be reggaetoneros. But those are highly improbable dreams. So then you've got maybe 40% of young Latinos going to university, with only about 2 to 5% actually graduating after 4 or 5 years. In fact, I still meet young adolescent Latinos all the time who tell me that they're on the trajectory to be the very first person in their family to get a college degree. Think about it. That's what it was like in the States back in the 60s. With all my young friends way back when, most of our parents didn't have university degrees. Well, my mother did, but that was rare. Problem is, Latinos are stuck in that mindset that any college degree makes their kid a huge success. Boy, are they wrong. It's sad. They're pumping out business and psychology majors to beat the band, and all they can get is a bank teller's job or a job at Starbucks. I'd say they've got some really terrible high school counselors down here, but that's just the way it was when I was a kid, too, up in the States. I remember clearly my high school counselor telling me that engineering was not a very good field to go into, because after the moonshot, NASA was winding down and laying off. Meanwhile, 4 years later, I had five solid engineering job offers before I even graduated from engineering school. Guidance counselors, man, they should string them up by their thumbs.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.